because most of the time people are just not willing to share, especially with their boss, you know, their feedback, their true feedback. And you're just like, hey, if you're like, hey, do you have any feedback for me? They're not going to answer you because yes. the stakes are too high.
That's right.
Right. And so how do you elicit that from them? Right. And so it's like, hey, you know, if you're not giving me some feedback or some way that I can improve, you're not being completely honest with me. And
that's right.
and I've got to figure out a way to elicit that feedback from them.
Hey guys, on this episode of MSP Mindset, I got the gift of speaking with Brian Hopp. He is an executive coach to MSPs doing 5, 10, and 15 million in revenue and more. And we got into how to build an authentic culture in your MSP. Might sound easy, but it turns out it's way more than bean bags and beers. If anybody's ever tried to make culture, you know that it starts at the top and you know that it's not always as easy as it sounds. So first, we start with how to find your zone of genius, what that means, and where you operate best. And we're going to dive into defining and building a culture that leads to true authenticity and open communication. If that sounds awesome, then you can't wait to hear what we're going to talk about. One thing we were talking about is understanding everybody's zone of genius. So tell me about that and what does that mean?
Yeah, that's great. And the zone of genius is it's a concept that's talked about in a few different places in a few different ways, right? So one of the most impactful places I've seen it talked about is by Gay Hendricks. He's got a book called The Big Leap, which is an amazing, amazing book. But it's also been called something, Dan Sullivan talks about it as called unique ability. Those are the two things that come to mind, the concept is there's kind of four zones. You start with your zone of incompetence, which is, these are things that I don't like and I'm not good at, or I don't know how to do. And so they're stuff that you should never do. Right. And this could be something like, fixing my car. Or hanging a ceiling fan, or, you know, things like that, that it's like, you really just shouldn't be doing them. Then you move to zone of competence, right? So I'm like, I can do it. And I might be good at it. I'm not great at it. So I don't really like it that much. And so it's like, yeah, I can do it, but probably should start to offload some of that stuff. And then the next zone is the zone of excellence, where you actually are, you're good at it and you like it. And this is where most people get stuck, because, because it's like, you're good at it. People say you're good at it. You like doing it, you know, so you keep doing it.
What's an example of that for you?
It could be different for different people. I think for me, it's probably like, financial stuff. Like I used to be a CFO. I've got, I know how to do all that stuff. You know, I love to dig into the numbers and do analysis and, jump into QuickBooks and do stuff, all of that. I like it. I'm good at it, but somebody else can do it. Mm-hmm. Right. And somebody else can probably do it better than me. Mm. And so then you have your zone of genius, right? Okay. And zone of genius is like that next level. It goes from, I like this and I'm good at it, to I love this and I'm great at it. And maybe I'm the only person in the world that can do this as well as I can do it. And usually there's one to three things that is for, for a leader or a business owner. And that's kind of the stuff. When you're in your zone of genius, it's like time disappears. You're just loving what you're doing. You could do it for hours and hours, and you're like in a trance of like, oh my gosh, this is, you come out of it and you're like, where did all the time go? Because it doesn't even feel like work a lot of times. Right. So, high performers can kind of get into a place. If you're really in your zone of genius, it's like, man, I don't feel like I'm working that hard, but it's because you're doing the stuff that's in that zone of genius. So time flies by, you're having a great time, you're doing stuff that only you could do. And it's in, you know, it's your high, absolute highest and best use for the company. So,
okay. So let's, yeah. let me try to understand that. So, and so there's something that I'm good at. I don't know what that one was called. The one before Zone of Genius, where I'm good at and I like it.
Zone of Excellence.
Zone of Excellence. Okay. So there, yes. There's excellence. And so you're used to be a CFO. You've known a lot about MSP. So there's a great example, right? Not yeah. that many people are both understand finances and MSPs. You're excellent. Okay, I get that. What's your zone of genius? You know, maybe there's one or two or three using your words.
There's different things, right? So while I was running my MSP, it was different than it is now, which I'm, you know, when I'm coaching and, you know, in that kind of a thing, but one that would, you know, that would definitely be, or it would go across would be coaching, right? So for me, when I'm, you know, when I was a leader, or when I was leading my, MSP, I was, you know, I had a leadership team and, I was much more of a coaching style leader than anything else. And that would be where I would sit with my team is like, hey, you know what you're doing. We've set out goals. We've set out, you know, your rocks, you know how to complete everything that you need to do. How can I be of support to you? How can I be of help to you? Where are you struggling? Not only here, but at home, how do we, you know, what's your level of satisfaction? If it's a two, how do we get it to a three or a four or a five, in different areas, you know? So, I mean, I would say coaching for me is like something that's solidly in my zone of genius and has been for many, many years. Because it's something that I love to do. I love serving people. I love helping people. I love the conversation that happens and how you can get somebody to insight, from kind of lost to like complete clarity in the matter of 45 minutes conversation. It's like, anyways, you can tell I'm getting a little energized talking about it, but that's for me and that goes on. I think that goes on, both sides. So, as a CEO and as a coach, full time. So,
okay. Yeah. So one of yours is zone of genius and I can tell how excited you're getting to that. That's a good indicator, right?
Right.
How do I determine that? Right. I'm listening, I'm an MSP or just me. Like, how do I determine this? Cause like you said, there's these things that to me, the sneaky parts are the ones that I'm decent at, the zone of excellence, you know, that some people still ask and they want help with that. And I'm pretty good at it, but how do I figure out my zone of genius?
Yeah. That's a great, great one. And yeah, there's a couple of exercises that I like to use. They're not easy, but they're pretty simple. So one involves doing an energy audit. Mm. So like, hey, take a week, take 2 weeks and write down everything you do. And look at, okay, what energizes me and then what drains me? And you separate it out into different things, right? So people, places, habits, attitudes, activities, work tasks, all of those things, and list everything out. So I was, you know, so man, I was working on, I don't know, AR the other day and it was totally draining to me. Great. Put that in work tasks that you don't like. If you can be disciplined about really writing down everything you do for a week or two, and put that in a draining and an energizing, you start to clarify some of those things. The second one is actually from EOS, which is a delegate and elevate exercise. And really what you do is you write down, okay, if you're using EOS, you'd say, okay, I'm sitting in four seats. Maybe I'm the visionary and I'm the integrator and I'm the director of finance and I'm the director of sales. And you write down, okay, what are all the roles or the responsibilities of those seats? Like specifically, and then you put them in those different buckets we talked about earlier. So what's What do you don't you not like and you're not good at? What do you not like and you're good at? What are you good at and you like? And then what do you love and you're great at? And so when you go through that exercise, you start to things start to become really crystal clear. So things that drain your energy, we delegate as quickly as possible. Things that we don't like and we're not good at, we delegate as quickly as possible. And then you just move along those. You can't do it all right away. It's almost impossible to do it right away. But you, as you start to shed stuff, as you start to gain more energy in your day to day, then you start to realize, oh my goodness, this is the stuff that's like, this is my highest and best use, and I need to absolutely get rid of all of the other stuff that's not generating the most energy for me, the most bang for the buck for my time that I'm spending, in the company. And, you know, and yeah. And what's the, you know, what's for the greater good of the business as well.
Okay. So if I heard you right, it's part doing your energy audit and mm-hmm. understanding that what gives me energy, what drains energy, and then combine it with the, kind of the EOS tool, right? Where you mm-hmm. understand the four areas you're in. And which one of those really drain you, and mm-hmm. combining those gives you the best picture of what to let go of first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And one other way, would be to kind of like survey the people closest to you, like, you know, and so maybe your direct reports, maybe your spouse, maybe some of your best friends, like, because a lot of times it's blind spots for us. You know, we actually don't know what our zone of genius is unless we do a lot of work on it, or unless we talk to people or ask, you know, hey, what do you see me being the absolute best at? What do you think is my like really unique gift, my unique thing that I bring to the world that nobody else does? And if you, you know, that's one additional way that you can really like start to become even more clear than just doing this like self-reflective work. Because yeah, you definitely want to get an outside perspective as well.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. And so combining what drains energy, and so you say go back and write down everything you did for the last 2 weeks. I went through an exercise like that. One thing that helped me, at least personally, was I had so much in my calendar already. Just reflecting at the end of the day, okay, yeah. In the spots that weren't scheduled, what did I do? What was mm-hmm. I doing? Email? Was I on the phone with a client? What's I, you know, yep. doing AR? I don't know. You know, like what were the things? And then, you know, does that give energy or take energy? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you've got a lot, it may not, you know, it may not be as arduous as it sounds, right? Because you already, right. you probably have a decent number of things where you can say, you know, if I really did what the calendar said, I had an hour, you know, with an yep. on-site meeting or with a client or whatever your calendar's saying. So yep. you can, it seems like you can pull these things together. When you're asking the folks closest, I love that you gave specifics, right? Your direct reports, your spouse, the folks, friends that you spend the most time with. How would you approach that? What is the ask, or do you have any recommendations when you go and say, hey guys, I'm kind of weird. I want to know more about myself. Like there's probably a better way to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's really like, I mean, I've got kind of a, you know, yeah, I guess somewhat of a framework around it. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's basically like, hey, I mean, you can even write an email like, hey, I'm doing some self-reflective work. I'm really trying to understand what the people closest to me think that I'm really good at. Mm-hmm. So where do you see me? You know, where do you see me shine the most? Where do you see me the happiest? Where do you see me the most energized? What am I doing that makes the most impact in the world? And asking questions like that of the people closest to you, you know, or in the world, you know, most impact in the world or in the business. What do you think I should start doing? What do you think I should stop doing? That's another really good question to ask as it relates to that. And if they're honest with you, if they're willing to be, you know, like honest and like, and actually, you know, share with you, it'll give you some really good data and some really good actionable insights. So yeah, those are just questions off the top of my head that I would ask if I were if I were doing something like that.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose depending on how candid those relationships are, you may get more
right.
mm-hmm. Direct advice versus just you're really great at lots of things, which really wouldn't be very helpful. I love that you said not only what could I start doing, but what could I stop doing? Tell me more about why you said that.
Yeah, that was, I want to say, that's just an exercise that I've gone through in the past, which is like, hey, you know, among the leadership team, we'd have that, right? So we'd be like, okay, it's start stop time. So we'd sit down and for each person, we'd say, hey, here's what I think you need to start doing. Here's what I think you need to stop doing. And we had a culture of very candid feedback, very open conversation, it took us a long time to get there. Like, don't get me wrong. We had so many struggles with all of this stuff, but if you can get to that point where it's like, hey, I'm willing to share hard things without fear of being judged. And there's this base of trust, that goes back to five dysfunctions of a team. But there's this base of trust. We can share the right things, share hard things, and know, hey, it's okay, and we can have a good, candid conversation about those things. So really, it's just like that would just be an exercise that we go through. Is like, all right, here's what I think, you know, for each person. Here's what I think you need to start doing. Here's what I think you need to stop doing. No judgment. This is just my thoughts, right? And you can choose to do that or not do that. But you know, if everybody has your thoughts about it and you know, the choice is theirs at that point. So
have you ever wondered if you could recover your backups? Let me ask a better question. Have you ever had a backup fail to recover? Have you ever lost data? Yeah, that's me. Here's what's crazy. 58% of recoveries fail to recover. So if you think it's just you, you couldn't be more wrong. What are we going to do about that? Well, you've got two options. Enter Servosity. What we do and what we exist to do is test your backups and manage them for you. We test every volume, every single day. We do weekly testing, monthly testing, and quarterly testing. And you can hand off the drudgery and babysitting of backups and the day-to-day management to our team that monitors your backups for you. It's time to level up your backup game. One way you can do that is visit servosity.com/learn more if you'd like to take the process that I've spent the last 18 years building and steal it and apply it to your MSP so that you can level up your backup game. Check out the link below in the description or visit servosity.com/learn more. I know as an entrepreneur, my list of things that I want to do or start doing seems to grow and become infinite. Did you find that the stop doing was harder or more impactful than the start doing, sometimes or not?
I think that it really can be. I think that it's like, the more things that we can drop, so that we can really focus in on those zone of genius things, the better, right? I mean, it goes back to 80-20. It goes back, to a lot of different things. Like, there's probably like three things that you should be doing as a CEO. Maybe four. The list should not be long, and you should probably spend most of your time in those areas, and to the detriment of everything else. Mm-hmm. And just like, hey, here's my lane, here's my zone, and anything else that needs to be done, I got to find somebody to do it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So getting the stop doing list is really powerful. I incorporated with my direct reports a weekly cadence, and I ask three questions, but one of them is, what do I need to stop doing? Mm. And it's not only for me, but what I realized is sometimes they're like, stop handing me these additional things outside of my lane, or stop being... vague when you're trying to assign something. And it's more helpful when they're more candid, the individual, mm-hmm. and when you built that rapport. But yeah. It's been helpful because it's not only been helpful to me. What do I need to stop doing? Maybe there's things I shouldn't do. But as often, just by asking that, It's kind of like you said, giving that permission to be vulnerable and open and say, you know, stop doing this. And sometimes like, hey, I'm spending my time outside my lane, but also it's just like, stop doing this to me, you know? And I think if I didn't ask that, I wouldn't get that feedback.
Yeah.
I can definitely relate to what you said. It takes some time to build that culture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did you do that with your team so that you could get there? Because you don't start there. You know, and it seems like, I don't know if you disagree, it seems like when you, if you had three people and you go to four, or if you have two and you go to three or whatever it is, every time you add a new person, sometimes it can feel like you start all over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So
how do you get to that culture and level of candor?
You know, it's got to be part of the culture, right? It's got to be like, hey, we are going to engage in authentic communication, which means that it's communication without judgment. It's communication without without demanding. There's no arguing. There's no like, hey, we're all here on the same team. We're all working for the greater good of the company. And you don't have to fear, you know, being fired because you speak your mind, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know, somebody's got to make a decision if there's disagreement and then there's disagree and commit, right? So if we're all on the same team, we're able to, we're able to have these conversations that are, you know, we have a foundation of trust. So at the end of the day, we're all in this for the greater good. And if the greater good means that I don't get my way, that's okay. And then having conversations in a way that, you know, there's this whole concept of, authentic communication or nonviolent communication. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but we actually talked about that. What's that?
Yeah. Tell me more about that. I want to make sure, you know, for everybody listening that we are on the same page about what you mean by that.
It's really a way of having a conversation that, that results in a positive action. So let's say I'm struggling with something. I have a feeling, right? It starts with a feeling. So let me go through it. So it starts with a feeling and then it goes to a need, right? So if I have a feeling, if I have a negative feeling, it's because I have some need or desire that's not being met. And then it goes into, I'm trying to solidify the framework in my head as we're talking. So there's a feeling and then there's a need, and then eventually it gets around to a request, right? So let's say you said something to me like, or, you know, let's say I was, we were going to have a meeting and you showed up late and I needed to have a conversation with you about it. Hey, when you showed up or late to this meeting, right? That, and you start with the, you know, what happened, because it's like, it's an observable thing that happened, right? It's not like, I don't start with, you don't like me or you're so disrespectful because, right? So, Damien, when you
talk
showed up
about
late
the fact.
For, yeah,
talk,
you talk about the fact. Fact. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you showed up late for this meeting, I really felt, disrespected because my time is really valuable and I really, you know, feel like I need to be feel respect. In the future, would you be willing to let me know if you're going to be late for a meeting? And If you can speak to what you're feeling and what your need is, and make a request that's actionable that they can actually do, then you have the ability to have a much more productive conversation. And by the way, you can't be like attached to the outcome, right? They may say, no, I'm not willing to do that because of X, Y, and Z. And you might have to learn to live with that, or you might have to have another conversation around that. But that's one example of how we kind of, how we kind of built some of that trust, because when you ask people in a way like, hey, would you be willing to do this? It gives them agency. It gives them freedom to say, yes, I would, or I would with, with these caveats to it, or something like that, or no, I'm not willing to, and here's why. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that's an example of nonviolent communication or authentic communication.
I love that. Yeah. And I love, because we all have these feelings and we don't always feel comfortable being open or vulnerable, you know, mm-hmm. And I know sometimes in the busyness, you just want to be like, why are you late?
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's not the right way to handle it. So that authentic or nonviolent communication's super helpful. So, and you're saying that's part of how you, built the culture, built the mm-hmm. trust.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. It was, I think it was actually a key part, because, you know, when you get to, you know, instead of demands or commands or that kind of a thing, even in a direct report situation, like, hey, people feel different when you're like, hey, would you be willing to do this? Mm-hmm. Then, hey, I need you to do this, or, you know, go here and do that, you know, like, which you can as the boss, right? But how does that make your people feel? Mm-hmm. In which scenario do they feel more respected, have more agency, and you know, and yeah, so that's just something, you know, something to think about, is like, how do you ask people to do or tell people to do things? It could make a big difference.
Sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, even the somewhat simple example, like, there's some people that if you're a minute or two late, that's a big sign of disrespect. Mm-hmm. And they kind of take it personally, like you said. And there's others, they just, that's how they are. They're going to show up late. Mm-hmm. And if you don't use the language to handle that. And I think most people would, if you said, hey, this, you know, you were late, this is how it made me feel. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to do this? Would you be willing to show up on time, or let me know if you're not? Mm-hmm. And tell them that makes you feel, you know, disrespected. I think most people will rise to the occasion, because you're going to that effort to communicate that, instead of, right, I think a lot of times it's easy in the busyness of life and client demands and phone ringing and email and team messages, Slack messages, whatever the things are, to be like, oh, why are you late? And just get mad. And either mm-hmm. probably the worst is not say anything and let it build up, or, you know, say anything. But if you say it, you can just be like, hey, if you're late again, you know, I'm going to yell at you. You're going to, you know, this is going to have some consequence. Mm-hmm. Right. I love the openness.
Yeah.
It was so powerful. Can you think of any other, using that kind of language that you, you know, see people needing to have, or you had to have around, here was an issue and here's how we used nonviolent, you know, authentic communication?
So let's say I'm bringing some, you know, a financial, you know, as a CFO at the time, I was bringing a financial report to the team. Mm-hmm. There was some error in it, right? Mm-hmm. For one reason or another. And somebody got upset, like, hey, like, it's really important for our financials to be correct. If you, you know, and kind of, you know, raise their voice and was like, we can't trust any of this data. It's crap because there's this one error in it. You know, I might be like, okay, you know, fair enough. There's an error. I'm going to go fix that. And then we can come back and talk about it. And then I might later on, go to that person and say something like, hey, when we were looking at that financial data and there was an error and you raised your voice to me, it, you know, it kind of hurt my feelings. You know, because I think that, you know, our culture kind of states, hey, we're going to have respectful conversations. And that, you know, that hit me pretty hard, internally. And so, you know, I would just ask that in the future, if you get upset, it's okay to be upset, but I'd ask you to use a calmer tone with me in the future. Would you be willing to do that? And that would be a way to have that kind of conversation. And 99% of the time, when you have a conversation like that, they'd be like, man, I'm sorry. I was a jerk. Yes, I would be willing to try my best to not raise my voice to you in the future. So,
right. Right. And I love it, because at least from my perspective, you're approaching it in a respectful way. You're also you're giving them an opportunity to help you. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think a lot of us, we have empathy, or especially if you're in the technical field, you're a problem solver. Here's a problem. I could solve it. Right. So you're giving them an opportunity to solve that problem. Like, this is the problem, because you're framing it from your perspective, and nobody can dispute how you feel. Right. It's your feeling.
Yeah. They can tell you you're stupid, but you know,
sure, yeah, right. They could say all kinds of things. Right. Yeah. But it's really hard to dispute. This is how that made me feel. And so I love that. It also means you have to start with some, just thinking out loud, some vulnerability, right? You have to be able to approach them and say that. And I think only the most hardened jerk would be like, whatever. I think, like you said, in 99% of cases, they would go, okay, wow. You know, I had a bad day, a busy day of this, that, and I just kind of erupted and, you know, apologize. And whether they do or don't, like, I think there's some probably rapport built because you came and said that. And then, you know, even if they didn't apologize, said, okay, you know, I won't handle it that way in the future, which it just seems so much better than a lot of other cultures, that even if they're not a, let's say, a really bad, you know, kind of toxic on the other end of the spectrum, but it's too easy in the busyness to sweep that stuff under the rug, right? There's like, for example, there's too many nice people out there, and you guys, nice people that are listening, that they won't bring that up. They'll just get mad and they remember it. And there's like this secret tally of the number of times Brian raised his voice and I'm mad at him for that nobody knows about, but I didn't have the courage to go to Brian and say, Brian, I don't like that. This is how it made me feel. Would you in the future? So I love that, because it creates a culture where you need to be open and vulnerable, which is a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, part of this is because there's a lot of nice people out there. Part of this, because I'm in the southern part of the U.S., so we tend to be very nice, and that can be great in one aspect. And another, maybe they're not telling you the hard truth of like the way that you, like in your example, raise your voice. That, you know, that that wasn't what I wanted to have. So I love that you're creating that, because otherwise, all those quote unquote little things over time, it really add up to where they're like, I don't know if I want to go in this meeting with Brian, because, you know, not every time, but at that time, at this time, this happened. And, but if I didn't let you know that, you have no opportunity to do anything about it. And I'll just speak personally. I'm going to do something like that, probably, if you work with me long enough and I'm not hot-headed, but make mistakes and do something or say something that maybe was insensitive or not the right time or whatever. And if you would give me the gift of telling me that, then we have an opportunity to take what was a negative and turn it into a positive. I love how that ties all the way back into culture. I wonder if you coaching people to do that, but also if this isn't maybe a nuance to your zone of genius, Brian, wonder if this authentic conversations or maybe even emotional intelligence is one of your zones of genius. It seems like something that you're just exceptionally good at bringing out.
Well, thank you for that. And I, you know, that's really good external feedback. So, you know, like we were talking about earlier, like getting feedback on that, it's, you know, it's vulnerability, right? Vulnerability is hard, but it also breeds other more vulnerability. And so, you know, so the question then is, how do you start to become a little more comfortable with it? Because it's never easy, right? Yes. It's never fun. No. How do you start to show that courage to have those conversations and to give feedback that might be tough? How do you start to see feedback as a gift instead of something that's just like, they're criticizing me, right? No, actually, they're giving you ways to improve. They're giving you ways to learn. And it's so important, like you said earlier, with your, you know, what you ask your employees or your team members, hey, what do I need to stop doing? That opens something up, because most of the time people are just not willing to share, especially with their boss, you know, their feedback, their true feedback. And you're just like, hey, if you're like, hey, do you have any feedback for me? They're not going to answer you because the stakes are too high.
That's right. Right.
And so how do you elicit that from them? Right. And so it's like, hey, you know, if you're not giving me some feedback or some way that I can improve, you're not being completely honest with me. And that's right. and I've got to figure out a way to elicit that feedback from them. And so I like what you do with that. And there's some other ways to do that as well. But yeah.
Yeah. I love that that you brought that up, Brian. Like I, you know, like most good things, I didn't create it. I learned it from others. Like what should I stop doing is one of those questions. But, the most candid folks and the folks who have the best relationship, they give the gift more often, mm-hmm. but frankly, there's easier questions to ask. Mm-hmm. You know, do you need anything this week? Do you have any roadblocks? Those are much easier to answer. What do you need to stop doing is the ones that most people just take a while to answer. And you hit this nail on the head. So I'm your boss. I understand the dynamic and why you might be more hesitant to share. Mm-hmm. But the challenge for me at least is it just because I am the boss does not immediately mean that I'm great at being vulnerable or that instantly, as soon as I became the boss, gain this emotional intelligence to be able to pull it out of you. And so, you know, that's, I guess, is me just trying to be open and vulnerable. Like, wow, I need this from you. Mm-hmm. You know, I need you to not only give it so you're aware of it, but I need it from you because I won't know. And so I think it's in some ways counterintuitive that I don't want to tell them that, you know, like, for example, let's go back to the one you used earlier. Maybe I showed up to a meeting late. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm the boss. What are you going to do? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what are they? They're going to say, hey, boss, if you don't show up, we're going to fire you. Like, they're not going to do that. Right. I totally get that. But I would love if somebody came and said, look, this is, you know, we have all these other competing initiatives that my time is valuable. This is how it made me feel. You know, would you let us know if you're running late or would you show up on time or mm-hmm. something? And give me the opportunity to respond. So mm-hmm. just tying it into your other example, I would love that instead of just if I did show up late, which I try very hard to not do. But as a side note, but if I did, like, give me the gift. And I think sometimes the language of, like, you know, calling it a gift versus, you know, constructive criticism. Criticism is never going to have a good connotation, right? So I love that. I know that for me is already a takeaway. I wanted to ask, it seems like you're really good at this. As you're coaching your clients, do you see other issues related to culture that, or what are the top issues you see that maybe catch them by surprise? I know as I'm growing, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, now I see in hindsight. What do you see related to either zone of genius or culture, or just as you're growing, you start to hit this pain line or you start to hit this wall?
The first thing that comes to mind, is as you're growing, you kind of have a culture gets created. Right. Mm-hmm. By default, right. Whether you defined it or not, every company has a culture. And what, a lot of business owners realize, I have one client in particular that, you know, he's got somebody who's a great worker, does awesome work, takes care of clients, all of that, cannot seem to show up on time ever, you know, usually an hour or two later than he's supposed to come in, but he works late to make up for it. But it also causes other problems for the owner and other team members, right? So it's kind of like, hey, you know, this guy's a great worker. He's been with us for a long time. He knows what he's doing. He's already trained, all of that. But your culture becomes what you tolerate, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of two things is going to happen. Either that's going to be your culture, or you're going to lose good people. Because they're going to see this person not carrying the weight, or you're going to get burned out as a leader because you're picking up slack from this person not not showing up on time. So you've inadvertently created this culture that's gonna really cause you problems down the line. And so the huge challenge is that you've got to make some very, very hard decisions as you grow with as related to culture. Because you can train, you can train the skill, but you can't train the culture fit. You can coach them, but there's a limit to where to how much you can coach people. And so, I think it's learning to make those hard decisions. I'd love to hear your experience on this, but as many people as I've had to let go over time, I've never once been like, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't have done that later on, 6 months down the road.
Yeah.
Do you have, have you had that same experience?
This exact same experience, right? And I tried to reflect on that. I've never regretted letting somebody go. And if you're not in that position, that may sound heartless, but what I've internalized that to mean is that probably means I've, in a lot of cases, waited too long. Exactly. And after asking others on the team, sometimes they're like, why didn't you make this decision 3 months ago? Like, this is really killing us. We're taking on the extra work because of that person. We're doing this or that. I love what you said earlier because it really captures it, right? Your culture is what you tolerate. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, Brian, I have never regretted letting somebody go. I have, on the other hand, regretted keeping the wrong person too long. Mm-hmm. And most, you tied in it. It often comes down, skill can be learned. It often comes down to this culture fit. Mm-hmm. And, you keep hoping, you keep coaching, and at the end of the day, like, there's hope that, you probably have to be an optimist and have hope to have been an entrepreneur in the first place and gone through the pain of starting a business. But then there's this just unreasonable hope that I hope this person's going to become a different person when they show up tomorrow. And that's where I have waited too long.
Yeah. Yes. And another interesting thought around that is, okay, if we're trying to create, a cult, if we're trying to just have only A players, right? If we're trying to create this amazing high performance culture and we've never regretted letting somebody go, are we doing that? Are we truly doing that? Right. So, like, if we're I don't necessarily like the idea of like, hey, we're always cutting the bottom 10% or whatever, but there's a thought in there of like, are we, like, do we actually have the best team that we can possibly have? And are we, are we consistently, moving forward in that? So, that's just another thought I had as you were talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody asked me a question one time, which is, let's say this business was done, you're starting another, but you're doing the same thing. Would you enthusiastically rehire every individual? Yeah. And so sometimes it's helped me go, oh, well, I didn't know that, like, oh, I guess, others are like, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And the others are like, And that sometimes gives that insight to where it's like, oh. And I think the ones where they're, they're just horrible, those are easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's never fun to let somebody go, but those are easy. It's the ones in between where it's like, usually show up on time or they usually get the work done.
Yeah.
And you're just and that's that decision. I can very much relate to what you said earlier of, like, you said you have a client that is a, somebody that shows up late, right? And pretty significantly, an hour or two. Probably harder to fire them. But we had a family member that was like that.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
And so harder to fire them. But the funny thing about it is we ended up having to tell them Thanksgiving. It was 2 hours earlier than it really was because they were usually an hour and a half to 2 hours late and we weren't going to wait on them. So, so they come flying in there 2 hours late and they were, amongst the first to arrive because we just, as a family, like, we just knew we had to tell them a different, time. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. And it's sad because, like, you want to tell them, like, you don't want to have to come up with an alternate reality, a different truth. Like, the real reality is that it was at 1, but we had to tell you it was at 11, Thanksgiving's at 11. And,
You know, I may or may not do that with my teenagers from time to time, you know, just set it a half an hour earlier. And then it's like, oh, look at that. We're on time. This is amazing.
I've learned that about myself, right? It's just like what you're going back to saying earlier. It's like, if you're on time, you're late. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, well, I've got to set my time to arrive as earlier than what the time says.
Yeah.
So that I'm, you know, not wasting your time. I'm showing up, I'm prepared, I'm ready.
Yeah.
So
and you're more peaceful, by the way, when you do that. It's just like, yeah, I'm not in a rush. I'm peaceful and I'm strolling in instead of, you know, instead of running, right?
Yes. I was actually just reading one of the Tim Ferriss books, and he was saying today one of his luxuries is just not being rushed. You know, luxury, for him, luxury was less about the fancy car and just a little bit less rushed. And so, yeah, and not bringing that into that meeting is also great from a culture perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I feel like I could talk to you all day. probably could. Shouldn't for your sake. Brian, this has been incredible. Thank you for spending the time to talk to me today, to be vulnerable and to talk to everybody that's listening and watching about what you do. Speaking of that, thank you, first of all.
You're welcome.
And thank you for doing that. And then how can my audience find you? If they want to ask you a question, get connected, get your help, where do they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with website discovery.brianhoppe.com. I actually have a guide there that's just talks about kind of how to scale your MSP. So there's some really good info there. So that's discovery.brianhoppe.com, and then LinkedIn. So it's just, you know, Brian Hoppe on LinkedIn, and you can find, or it's /in/ Brian Hoppe is my link there. And so I'm on LinkedIn all the time. DM me. I'm usually pretty quick to respond there as well. So either one of those spots is good.
Awesome. We'll make sure to put the links in the description. But if you're listening, Hoppe is Hoppe, just to make it a little easier for you.
Yes. And yeah. Brian with an I, that's spelled the correct way.
So there you go. I love that. Yes. Last name Stevens. I also, with a V, the correct way. And so I tend to have that.
How does the PH make a V sound?
Yes, it is exactly right. So, that I love that. This is awesome, Brian. Thank you for just the gift today. Please reach out to Brian. Again, he's been in the trenches from a technician to CEO. He's grown MSPs to 5-10 million plus. So I'm sure he could help be a resource, whether it's culture, whether it's vulnerability, whether it's a whole host of other things. Don't miss out on this opportunity to reach out to Brian. Thank you so much for being here, Brian.
You're welcome.